From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1967 in downtown Rochester. That's when Xerox built the iconic Xerox Tower at South Clinton and Broad. According to recent reporting from Amaret Miller in the Democrat and Chronicle, Xerox spent $20 million then. That's roughly $175 million today when adjusted for inflation. 1,700 Xerox employees moved over to the tower in the late 1960s, and Xerox would become known as one of Rochester's big three, of course, alongside Kodak and Bausch & Lomb. As Miller notes, real estate ads would even tout the skyline presence of the Xerox Tower. But of course, Rochester's big three dwindled over time. By 2018, Xerox moved their remaining employees out to the Webster campus, and that 30-story tower, more than 400 feet tall, would need to be reimagined. But by whom? In 2020, Galena Development bought the tower for more than $8 million, but Galena is quick to point out that the actual cost was far higher, with a need for nearly $40 million in renovations and redesign. No one from Xerox remains there. It was a blank canvas. And today, the big spaces occupied by the former Big Three see different levels of progress. Kodak Tower is mostly empty, and if you talk to people who have been inside recently, they describe it as stuffy and in need of serious redesign work. Out-of-state bidders continue to show interest there, but there are no firm plans yet. In other words, local leaders would love to see the Kodak Tower go the way of Xerox Tower. Xerox Tower is now Innovation Square. By this fall, 275 college students will live there. There's a gaming hub, new co-working space. The Galenas are trying to unify a vision for the tower, not just college students who might soon leave town, but later-year college students and grad students who have an interest in tech and a willingness to see Rochester as a permanent home. Even the old Xerox skating rink has been repurposed. Remember that? It's now a sunken grassy area known as the Community Commons. On summer days, you'll see people sunbathing or throwing a frisbee or working outside in the fresh air. The space is not fully done yet. There's still a work in progress of sorts. But for the first time in years, there seems to be a cohesive plan for one of Rochester's truly iconic and important buildings. And we're going to talk about how we got there and what comes next with our guests. Evan Galena is a manager at Galena Development Corporation. Evan, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us in studio is Marla Evangelista, general manager of Serendipity Labs. Marla, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Evan. Thank you for having us.
And Ben Garvey on the line with us, the founder and CEO of Great Lakes Gaming. Hi, Ben. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for the invite.
Well, let me start with Evan Galena, who was, before the hour began, kind of briefly telling me the story. But, I mean, you know, I've been hosting this program for the better part of a decade, and I remember 5 years ago all the talk that Xerox is fully vacating. What's going to happen? How can you reimagine a space? Is anyone going to want to put a bid down given the not just the upfront cost of getting the property, but what it's going to take to get it to where, you know, where a vision would be? And it's a lot's happened in just a couple of years. Take us back to what Galena saw there and how that happened.
Well, I think first and foremost, we saw a big void in our city. You know, you look at this from a development standpoint, and our company has invested in three large properties at that point in time. And we saw this tower going empty, going dark, and we said, okay, this is going to be an issue for us. We have other things in the works, and with a big empty building, 580,000 square feet, the only successful developer is going to undercut the market and try to steal other people. And we said, okay, we could try to do that, but then we're just going to be competing with ourselves at our other properties, the Metropolitan, One East Ave, and where Seneca is, the Seneca building. So, okay, let's think outside the box here. What do we lack in our downtown, and what do we see that can fill that void? And instead of creating more competition, bring everything downtown up and help rise all ships here. So it started with some brainstorming, and this takes us back to probably 2018 when we originally saw the building kind of having the lights turned off. We said, okay, let's see what the void is downtown. We said, we have an incredible talent pool in our city. You look at all the colleges and universities. There's 70,000 students in Rochester. You know, Rochester's a college town. You always hear that. And you walk the streets of downtown, you don't see any college students, with the exception of some Eastman School students. So we said, what if we could create a collaborative campus right downtown that we could promote kids to come, experience the city, and hopefully fall in love with the city and then want to stay here post-graduation? And so from that standpoint, we had some conversations with the presidents of U of R, RIT, Fisher, and Nazareth. And everyone said, this is a great idea, but who's going to do it? We said, we don't want to partner with one school. We want to partner with everyone. We want to create this collaboration. We kind of dubbed the term academic collisions was a big buzzword for us. And what that promoted was, okay, you might have a medical student living on the same floor as an engineering student from RIT, living on the same floor as a business major from NAS or Fisher or marketing major. And if you look at that in a little silo, that's a business right there. But you need to create that connection. So in the middle of COVID in September of 2020, we purchased the building and we had a master plan and things are going somewhat according to that plan. Some slowdowns have occurred. Some adjustments have been made. But we're really starting to see things shape up. And, you know, the next couple of weeks, we'll have about 275 students living there, as you mentioned. And it shows that there's an incredible proof of concept for this downtown. There's a very strong demand. Everything that we've built has been occupied from a student housing standpoint. And we're seeing kids starting to appreciate the city. You know, I'll give you one example, Evan. We have branded bicycles right in our lobby that kids can just take for free and ride around. Well, you'll see them at Park Ave. I've seen them at East Ave Wegmans. Kids take them to U of R's campus. One kid was out at Jefferson Road in Henrietta doing grocery shopping on this bicycle, and it's really cool to see. So, you know, we're excited about it, and it's not without good, strong partnerships that this will be successful. So you talk about the schools. They've been great to work with. A company like Serendipity coming to Rochester, a national brand, has been incredible. Ben with GLG and what he's been doing has been fun to watch. And recently, over the weekend, we announced that the YMCA is going to be opening a fitness center, kind of where the old skating rink was as well. So it's really a community that we're trying to create. We keep saying it's much more than just a real estate project to us. We really want to see Rochester grow and get back to the levels that it was, you know, in the 60s and 70s when the big three were thriving. And Rochester has experienced its growth. We've been a bit stagnant in the last 10, 20 years. But I think we're at a tipping point where you're starting to see the dominoes fall. And there's development occurring. There's people moving back to an urban center. And there's businesses that are emerging here or growing here or making investments here, which is just incredible.
And if I could just jump in here to make sure we understand the scale of it. 30 floors is correct, right?
29.
Roughly half for student housing, is that right?
15 floors total, yep.
Is it full, like as in fully booked out for student housing, or is there still space?
So to date, we've completed 10 floors, and those are all fully booked.
Okay.
Phase 3, which is another 5 floors of housing, will come online, a portion of it in January for the spring semester, and then the following August of 23.
So above the student housing, you've got 14 floors. Where does Serendipity go?
So there's a couple commercial floors mixed in the middle for a couple reasons. There's some mechanical floors. There was a tenant that was there when we purchased the building on 2 floors. So the top residential floor is 21. So then Ben is on the 22nd floor. And Marla and her team will be on 23 and 24.
We'll talk about what they're doing at Serendipity and at Great Lakes Gaming coming up here. How did the YMCA deal come together and what exactly is happening there?
So, you know, there was a big kind of to-do when the YMCA closed the doors at their Main Street location.
Yeah.
And there was a big conversation that occurred saying, well, why does the YMCA want to pull out of downtown? Well, that's not the case. The YMCA is extremely invested in downtown. They have other satellite locations throughout the city. But they really wanted to keep a fitness center in our center core. And they were just trying to figure out the right way to go about that, that met their model. And try to partner with someone that could help bridge that gap for them. You know, their building on Main Street there was 100 and some odd thousand square feet. It's just massive. And I just don't think they had the use for it anymore. So we offered an opportunity to say, let's lower your overhead. Let's get you in a space that works. And by the way, we'll have this built-in clientele that's going to be living here that you guys can tap into. And it provides a great amenity for us. And it provides long-term stability on their end.
Okay, and when's it open?
Projected September to October range.
The clientele has to come from your building, or is it more open?
Open to the public.
It's open to the public. Okay. And you're right. There's been a lot of to-do And that's not, I mean, the YMCA, I think, can speak for themselves on this. And we'll talk to them separately, because I know a lot of listeners have had a lot of emotional investment in terms of what happens there. Is the Y going to stay downtown? What clientele are they serving? Who is reachable, et cetera? We will have that conversation separately. But that is now at least one component, a downtown president at the Y there at Innovation Square. What else, when you describe the top levels here, what is sort of still kind of a blank canvas or unknown? How much space is not kind of earmarked yet?
So the 25th floor through the 29th floor are currently vacant. If you get off the elevator and walk into that floor, you will feel like you're in the 90s.
In the 90s.
It is a little retro. So typically our approach has been to gut everything that we've touched and just really start with that blank canvas, like you said. So we have all those floors earmarked for commercial users. We are getting a good amount of inquiries, trying to work through that and trying to figure out companies that can utilize our student body right at the project. So we'd really love to create this concept where, okay, you're a student, you're living there and going to school in the spring and fall semester, and our leases are one-year leases. So you have an apartment to live in over the summer months, and that's a perfect opportunity to try to slide into an internship downtown. And so if you're a kid from, you know, Cleveland, Ohio, let's say, well, maybe you don't have to go back home. You already have a place to live. Why not try to get a job here and experience something else and try to grow your presence in this city as an individual? And that's really an approach that we've taken a firm stance on. We've worked with Campus Rock quite a bit, and they're helping streamline a lot of those internship opportunities. And a lot of that is just awareness. You know, you see it, I'm sure. There's a lot of competition in the workplace right now. It seems like every company is trying to hire. Everyone's having struggles trying to find that employee base. So, you know, we're bringing it to these downtown companies in a way.
Is there, in Galena's view, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I sort of do because that's my job. Is there, in Galena's view, a significant difference between something like a Xerox tower, which is now Innovation Square, and a Kodak tower, which does not have a you know, sort of an identity yet?
Yes and no. I think proximity plays a part in that. You know,
proximity to
amenities, cultural attractions, bars, restaurants.
Xerox Tower had an advantage there.
I would say yes.
Yeah.
The Kodak Tower is a absolutely beautiful building, extremely iconic, but you're not as attached to the East End District, the Strong Museum, Eastman Theater. You know, you're more accessible to Park Ave neighborhood. It's more of a neighborhood down there, where Kodak, in my opinion, is just a little more removed from that.
Less walkable to where people want to walk to.
I would agree.
And what you just described is right in the wheelhouse of what we talk about young professionals wanting. And it's not a cliche, is it? People want to be able to walk to coffee shops. They want to walk to the theater shop if they can, et cetera. They want that, don't they?
They do. You know, I think Rochester is always going to be a car city, right? We're always going to have vehicles that we can drive.
Sorry.
That we're going to have to at some point. But if you can minimize that, that's the goal, right? So if you, even if you don't live downtown, if you drive in for the morning, go to work, now you have a gym you can go to. You can go to a show downtown. And maybe you're, instead of leaving at 5 o'clock sharp, you're leaving at 8 p.m. after you've had dinner somewhere and experience something. So trying to extend the amount of time that people actually spend downtown is certainly a goal as well.
Talking to Evan Galena, who is a manager at Galena Development, and we're talking about what they've done with the old Xerox Tower. It's now Innovation Square, student housing on a significant number of the 29 levels, 10 of them now full, and another 4 or 5 to come in the next phase of development, but they're doing really well with that part of it. And Great Lakes Gaming and Serendipity Labs are there now. And who was first?
Great Lakes was.
So let's talk about this. So before I jump in with Ben, give me a sense, Evan Galena, give me a sense for why you thought this was a fit for what you're doing at Innovation.
So in my opinion, Ben is like the poster child for innovation and what we represent. RIT grad, had a concept, pitched it to the RIT Tiger Tank, was awarded some founding money through RIT to grow his business. And we offered him opportunity to come in to our building on the 22nd floor, incredible views of downtown, and grow his vision And we've had a great partnership so far. And, you know, we want kids to feel like they can achieve their goals at Innovation. And we can just be a conduit for that. I can't go in and tell Ben how to run his company, but I can help provide him affordable space in a cool setting with amenities and an approachable lease term and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, it's up to Ben what he wants to do with that. And we have a lot of support behind him, and gotten to know Ben over the last year or so very, very well. And we believe in what he's doing. But that's, you know, you talk to other students that have these startup ideas, and sometimes they just need a little help to get over the barriers. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to try to provide.
When did you close that deal with Great Lakes?
Ben, he's checking my memory here.
I think it was June last year, so just over a year ago.
Yep.
And when did you formally get in there, Ben?
It had to have been that same year that they bought the tower, and it was just a few months later during the wintertime when I got first introduced to the Galenas.
Okay. And tell us what Great Lakes Gaming is, first of all.
Yeah. The best way to describe our location there at the tower is the country club for gaming. So we're looking to provide a kind of higher-end experience, a little bit more clean, top-of-the-line video game experience for an older generation. So like the college kids that are living in there, that's who we were really focused on, so that age and up, because we wanted to create something where you and your friends could go hang out, chat, and have fun on the weekend. And then on the weekdays after work, there might be some sort of event or networking event with local businesses downtown where you can, as a college student, meet these different job opportunities and do it in a setting that's a little bit more in time with where we're at.
Just because I am now in the category of the olds, I have to press to make sure I understand all of this. So tell me again what's happening on the weekend. If I go to the space for Great Lakes Gaming on the weekend, what's actually happening?
Yeah, so we have a bunch of computers, the latest generation of video game consoles, so like your PlayStation, Xboxes, and you can show up, start playing some video games with your friends, or meet other people that are playing video games too. We also host tournaments, so you can go into our online tournaments and compete for some real cash prizes.
Now, as someone who played some very rudimentary video games growing up. Well, I mean, like Zelda. I mean, everybody played Zelda
yeah.
and stuff like that. Those were all games when I was growing up that you played at home. And now, I mean, of course, the arcades of the world were there when I was growing up. What you are describing, hit 2 points if you could, Ben. First of all, there's this image that I have in my mind of gamers who don't have to leave home, don't have to leave their own personal space, don't need a shared space. So I wonder if you could touch on that. And also, I mean, is this sort of a modern arcade? What is this?
Yeah, it's definitely a modern arcade and a little bit beyond that as well. And with our gaming facility, it's never meant to replace what you have at home. I mean, when you want a game alone and at home and, like, you know, your comfort setup and stuff, that we're not going to be able to replace that. What this is more for that social atmosphere that's missed when you're gaming home alone. So on those days that you want to go out and do something with friends, there's now another addition to what is available to the public here in downtown. And sometimes what's missed in gaming is that lack of professional structure that's needed for certain video game events. So when you come into the facility, you know, you have stuff already set up for you. All you have to do is just sit down and play. And then there might be some events that are there for you to sign up for and participate.
Okay. How popular are tournaments?
We run a weekly one every Wednesday that gets over 64 teams of 5 players. So that's our biggest one that we're known for. And then we host some weekly ones as well that get anywhere from 32 teams or more.
Okay, so again, Evan Galena, similar to the Y, you've got a captive audience for Great Lakes Gaming there, but they're drawing from anybody who wants to come to these events, et cetera. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's not just kids game and not just college students game. A lot of young professionals are, you know, involved in that scene, and I think this concept is going to grow, And I think, you know, I always had this vision of like a league, right? Where you have one company playing against another company in Ben's space and kind of having fun with it. And, you know, it's not dissimilar to that group that was playing wiffle ball on Parcel 5
every week. It's like a company softball game.
Yeah, exactly. It's the newer version.
That's amazing. Marley, you're nodding over there. This is... You think he's hitting the target demos, what they want there?
Yeah, so I had a tour with a gentleman who is my member now, and I told him about Great Lakes, gave him Ben's information, and now he's a member there as well. So
there's a lot of interconnectedness, and that is by design. So one of the themes that we're talking about this hour is as we take a look at part of the big three space in Rochester and what happens at a place like Xerox Tower, what the Galenas have tried to do at Innovation Square is to sort of be intentional and not just say, well, housing here, commercial space here, we'll see what goes there. They're really trying to sort of bring people into a space where they're going to want to use not just the housing aspect, but they might be interested in Great Lakes Gaming, might be interested in co-work space. And I wonder in the future, Evan, if those higher floors that you described, will you be just as intentional about what you bring in to spaces like that?
We hope to be. Not to a point where we would turn people away if we didn't fit in with the, you know, the quote unquote vision. But, you know, we'd love to have a young tech company in there that needs engineers and we could be a feeder right into that program. That's a big goal of ours. And I think that's kind of the alignment with Marla's group as well, where let's say you're a grad student at U of R and you have a senior thesis and you want a more professional space to work in on a per diem basis or something, you could go right upstairs to Marla's space and pay her daily rate. And
oh, I can't wait to talk about co-working with Marla because I find all of this so interesting. And I sort of wish I was a 20-something again, really thinking about workspace because in our second half hour, we're going to really talk about where people find meaning, where they want to be to work, and what they're looking for. And I know that's where serendipity comes in. One more question, Ben, just on this subject before I pivot a little bit. I could probably guess, but I suspect I would be wrong. What is the most popular game played in your space so far?
We have a game called Valorant, which is produced by one of the biggest game publishers. That often is the most common. Then we sometimes do some FIFA with the new soccer team, Flower City Union, and that's always a blast.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. But what's surprising is a lot of the people that come in and are members, they play all sorts of different games that I've never even known about. Like we had a member playing a truck simulator game on our computers, and he set it up so that the lights reflected what was happening in the game. He was getting pulled over by the police in the game, and the computer started turning red and blue. I was like, what the heck? And, yeah, it's just all sorts of different games is what we enable up there on all that equipment.
Ben, how long are you there? I mean, what is the plan for Great Lakes Gaming? And I don't know what a lease is structured like. I mean, Evan's like, you're going to have him reveal the whole lease on there.
I mean,
what's the plan?
I plan to be there for a while. I mean, our name is Great Lakes Gaming. I get to see Lake Ontario from, you know, up on the 22nd floor. I don't want to leave that, you know. As well as, you know, providing that space for the students. I lived at RIT for 4 years as an RA and also just a freshman. I never had anything like that, and I'm jealous. Now I'm the one having to run this gaming facility, and I can't enjoy it as much as I would have liked to as a college student.
But listen, college students or post-college students designing space for college students, it's pretty smart. It's pretty smart. You know what the market wants. Ben, did you think when you were at RIT, did you think you would stay in Rochester?
I didn't really think it. I was kind of hoping to just because I kind of liked where the city was going. You know, when I was a freshman, I came downtown. It was kind of horrifying. But now it's like I come downtown. I live right downtown now, and I can walk to the tower to go to work. I pick up a coffee like we were talking about earlier, and next thing I know, I'm working in the office. Afterwards, I go to the gym, and then I can walk back to my apartment. Just feels like I'm back at college in a way where everything is just in a nice walking distance and everything I need is right here downtown.
Where do you walk for coffee, Ben?
I go to Bite, which is the cafe that's right there at the tower. So that makes my life easy. And then sometimes, you know, can't miss a Dunkin' Donuts once in a while.
I don't think you're that far away from Java's, Ugly Duck. I mean, like,
no, yeah.
There's a lot happening.
It's Spot,
yeah,
Fuego. I walk by it all the time.
yeah, it's all, yeah, it's very interesting what's happening there. After we take our only break, I'm going to ask Marla about Serendipity's arrival in this space, and we're talking about the repurposing of the old Xerox Tower, which is Innovation Square, with Evan Galena, a manager at Galena Development. Ben Garvey, you just heard, talking about Great Lakes Gaming. He's the founder and CEO. Marla Evangelista is the general manager of Serendipity Labs. We'll talk to her next, and we'll take some of your feedback as well, coming up in our second half hour. Coming up in our second hour, the August edition of the good news stories that you might have missed in your community or in your region. The kind of stories that fly under the radar, individual efforts to lift people up. And the kinds of stories that take us down to Hollerhorn Distilling, where there was a devastating fire, but it rallied a community to come together and help rebuild. We'll talk about helping kids get ready to go back to school and a lot more next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Marla Evangelista is general manager of Serendipity Labs, which... Evan Galena, you were pointing out this is a national company, yes?
That's correct.
When did you get in touch? When did they get in touch with you?
I actually had a friend of mine who owns a couple franchises across Rochester and Buffalo. And in his Buffalo location, they were looking at a Serendipity Labs for their office space. He said, "Have you ever heard of these guys?" And I said, "No." He goes, "You got to check them out. They're doing great things. I'll get you a contact. And I'll get you in touch, and you can pitch them on your project. There's a ton of synergy there. You just got to get in touch with the right people." So through that conversation, of course, he got me in touch with them, and I kind of pitched them on the project. They told me that my presentation, my PowerPoint was not great, but my my explanation of the project was fantastic, and they were very excited for it. So
they're tough, man.
Oh, it was hilarious. We laugh about it now, but we've created a really strong partnership with them, and they're excited about what we have going on, and they're a growing company, and they really want to try to target cities that aren't, I used to say second tier cities, I'm not allowed to say that anymore, but cities that aren't New York, Boston, Chicago, LA, you know,
sure,
some of those bigger cities. So really a lot of focus on smaller cities that have what I refer to as sleeper employees, where we might have 50 Amazon engineers in Rochester, but maybe they're all working remotely, and this would allow them a place to hang their hat. And so that was really their concept, and it really intrigued me quite a bit. And I thought, you know, again, we've got talent here. If we make it more accessible, what could happen?
Two floors, right?
Two floors.
Okay. And when did this all come together, Evan?
We signed that deal probably 10 months ago, so maybe, you know, October, November last year.
So let's get the sense of how it's going, and Marla can describe as the general manager there of what it really means, because it's a little different. I mean, I think a lot of people are more familiar now, Marla, with co-working, but it sometimes is a little different place to place. Can you describe what's going on there?
Yeah, so Serendipity Labs, like Evan was saying, is 30 locations around the country. We are expanding in the UK. So headquarters in Rye, New York. I think that a little bit different than what you see downtown here is that we are international. So you can go to Buffalo, walk in, use the same credentials for Wi-Fi, and it does act as a membership
okay.
service.
It's been heartbreaking for you to see WeWork blow up, right? I mean, that's been really difficult. And are they a competitor? Are they, yeah?
Somewhat.
Okay. You've probably seen the documentary, right?
I have not.
Oh, come on. But so Serendipity has the space in Rochester now. And what is it like in there? If you can, for people who haven't been there, kind of give us a little bit of a description there.
We're more of a modern upscale membership. We have 24th floor and the 23rd floor. We are open today. So the offices are 1 to 2 person offices. I also have team rooms, and I also have a co-working space. So drop-in plans, terms for 6 months, 12 months, or 24 months is the longest term that you can get in. And, you know, speaking with Evan and the other guys is that we are a serendipitous relationship. You know, we have lawyers in the office, insurance providers, and of course, nonprofits and people who are starting their own business.
Are most of the people coming in there using the shared space, or is it is there more space that is sort of walled off, closed off offices?
Yeah, I have a mixture of both. I have a couple teams, and I have a few offices that are sold for individual use. I have someone who is studying for her MBA, and she has her in-laws at home right now, so she's looking for a space to study.
Okay. How full are you?
I'm about 4% full on the 24th floor. So, you know, today is the first day open, so, you know, we're in that process of getting everyone in.
It's a very exciting day yes. Here. Why are you here? If you really should be over there. What ultimately, if things work out exactly as you want, how full does it get? I mean, what does a humming space really look like at Serendipity?
The goal is 100% capacity.
100%. Yep. And I think some listeners may hear that and go, well, then there's no, like, if I'm a member there and it's 100% capacity, I'm going to walk in and there'll be no space for me.
Yeah. I mean, with us, we have two floors. So I'm not sure if we'll ever have full capacity on both floors, but that's, of course, the goal. You know, if there is a need for an office, we have the ability to work in focus rooms and retreats and conference rooms. So there is a good amount of space where I don't think that will ever be the issue.
Gotcha. Okay. And it is an interesting idea that you're going to be able to cater to people who, if they travel, they can find a Serendipity in another city.
Correct.
And use that space. So it's like a traveling office space for some folks. But for others who aren't traveling much, do you get the sense of one line of work or one sector that is targeting this more than others?
Not right now. I'm seeing a lot of people who work, who live in Pittsburgh or the suburban areas coming to work downtown. They used to work downtown and they're ready to be back downtown. So the parking garage that we offer is probably the best in the city. $50 a month, I think, is prime parking for any city. So having the ability to come in, park in the garage, come up to your floor, you know, maybe step down to have a bite to eat at Bite, we really are a one-stop shop, and that's the goal.
Okay. So, Evan, in the future, do you get the sense that co-work space is kind of part of the culture now? And again, it's not just co-work space, it's Serendipity. There's a lot of different variations of it. But I kind of thought a few years ago, I wonder if we were going to be oversaturated. Then the pandemic hit. There was a little bit of a lull. And now there's so much more interest again. And I wonder if this is part of the culture, how you kind of see this in terms of the fabric of workspace in the future.
It's definitely an aspect of it. You know, in my experience, in the last, going back, let's say, 5 to 10 years, every company that we talked to was a minimum 5 to 10 year lease term.
Mm-hmm.
And now with COVID, what you saw is people don't want long lease terms. They want the flexibility because it's put a sense of unknown into all of our heads. Well, what if we have to shut down again? I don't want to be paying for this massive overhead.
Right.
I want to be able to hit the off switch. And that's kind of what Marla and her team can provide. You know, as she said, the longest lease term is 24 months. Whereas for our buildings, you know, 15, 20,000 square foot user, we probably wouldn't do anything less than a 5-year term. So, because we want that stability based on the investment. But with this, you know, she allows people to have that flexibility. And if they need to come and go as they please, they can do that. And the way that their space is built out, it really doesn't take, you know, a big investment. If you're a user and you walk in, it's plug and play.
That notion of getting used to a little less stability, I guess we would say, is that hard for developers? Is that hard for Galena and your team to say, we're now in a world where people feel very shaky about 5 and especially 10-year leases? We're going to have to get a little bit more used to uncertainty?
Yeah, there's been a learning curve there. A lot more open conversation with folks and a lot of transparency. And, you know, it kind of works both ways, though. If you have people working at home, some companies are trying to plan growth to have people come back to the office. Other people are saying, well, regardless of what we do, we're never going to bring everyone back. And so it's really working on a case-by-case basis. From our standpoint, we prefer the long-term stability. But we're not always driving that.
Now, I'm going to ask Marla Evangelista of Serendipity to do a little bit of describing for listeners who are curious what that sort of the variation of kind of work arrangements are. You said 24 months is the longest, but I mean, some people are more interested in closed offices, and I don't know if they reserve one office that's theirs, that's only theirs, or there's a suite of offices, they can get one of them. I mean, what's the range of what's it look like and what are people paying for?
All of the above. So we have dedicated offices that have 24/7 access. So the security is secure 24/7. They can get up to our floor with their key card, and they are able to access their desk, as Evan said, turnkey. So guests can come in with their laptop, and they have their Wi-Fi credentials, and that's all they need. So they have the desk, the chair. We have a cafe area full of products for purchase, market items, candies, cookies, chips. And then we also have free complimentary coffee, tea, infused water, really acts as a member. I have someone greeting the guests as they walk in. We have an area where people can sit down and take a minute for a lounge area. I have a beautiful view of the 24th floor of the whole city as a co-working space. So the views are the best in the city.
Okay. And do you think that most people are signing up there? It's for a year, 2 years, 6 months? I don't know what the terms look like.
I have a monthly. I have a
monthly. Okay.
We have a really great deal going on right now. We're a 5 for 5 giveaway. So we're giving away 5 memberships to 5 people for 5 months, unlimited co-working.
And do you think most of your clients are going to end up being month to month?
I have a range. So some of the members have the ability to get their offices paid for by their company. Some of them, you know, have a budget for a monthly rate, and some of them are interested in getting, you know, a longer term to maybe get 1 or 2 months complimentary.
I want to ask Ben Garvey a little bit about this. I mean, Ben's talked about, you know, how he sees his own floor and the space there for Great Lakes Gaming. I am curious to know, Ben, just in terms of you and your colleagues, your peers, if this kind of workspace, do you think this is here to stay? Is this part of your generation's sort of contribution to what people want, and will we see more of it?
I think it allows for flexibility, which is all that we really want nowadays. All my friends have graduated at the same time as me, and I see that, you know, wherever they've moved to, they're doing similar stuff where they work in an office or a co-working space, and then they work at their apartment here and there. I think having a space like this, especially at the type of tower that Innovation Square is ideal. I think it just makes sense. And it's already working out great for me. Like Marla was saying earlier, one of her tenants is now a member at my location, and he came down with one of his coworkers, and we're gaming all day on Friday after work.
Yeah, there we go. So,
yeah.
And Marla mentioned the 24th floor. For people who dog the city of Rochester, if you haven't seen it from a high vantage point, it's a beautiful city, isn't it?
It's incredible.
It's legitimately gorgeous.
Yes.
It's not.
Yeah.
And this is me being a homer, I know. But it is, isn't it, Evan? Come on, man.
I'm biased, but yes.
Yeah, it really is. I want to ask all of our guests about some headlines that came in the New York Post this weekend, though, that kind of dovetail with what we're talking about, how people want to work, the spaces they want, maybe the spaces they don't want, and how things are changing. And the author, and I don't know that he's a journalist, I guess psychology writer, Malcolm Gladwell, talked to the New York Post, and he said essentially that we got to stop working from home. We got to go back to an office under one company's heading, and you got to be part of a team at an office or a work location. You can't do it from home anymore. You can't do it from a cafe. You can't do it from a coworker. We have to be together. And he says, quote, "It's very hard to feel necessary when you're physically disconnected. As we face the battle that all organizations are facing now in getting people back into their office, it's really hard to explain this core psychological truth, which is we want you to have a feeling of belonging and to feel necessary. We want you to be part of our team. And if you're not here, it's really hard to be part of something. It's not in your best interest to work away from the office. It's not in your best interest to work from home. I know it's a hassle to come into our office, but if you're just sitting in your pajamas somewhere or in your bedroom or a cafe, is that the work life you want to live? Don't you want to feel part of something? And Gladwell added, I'm getting really frustrated with the inability of people in positions of authority and leadership to explain this effectively to their employees. If we don't feel like we're part of something important, what's the point of all this? If it's just a paycheck to you, then it's like, what have you reduced your life to? End quote. So I'm laughing here because this to me is the classic Malcolm Gladwell. And that, like, for 5 seconds, I'm like, yes. And then I think about it for like a minute and I'm like, no, which is like how I feel about most Gladwell stuff. But where I think Gladwell's correct is I think people do need to feel part of something. And that is true in a lot of different spheres, not just work. People need to feel part of something, a community. It could be a community of thinkers. It could be an online group. It could be charity and service work. For some, it could be religious communities. For some, it is offices and work. So he's not wrong that there is a human need. Of course there is, to feel connected to something. But if he's upset that people don't want to go back to the old office structure where it's exactly how it used to be 20 years ago, he should be asking why people don't feel a part of something at more of the actual workplaces. Why is it that so many people work in places where it is just a paycheck and you don't feel like you're part of an important team or you're contributing something to society or, you know, that you're necessary? That is the fault not of the worker but of the employer and the way we're structuring society. So that's one part of it. But then the other part is I think it's natural for people to think, well, now that we know, we can go to a co-work space. We could work from home, perhaps. I could work in a cafe if I want. That's more efficient for a lot of employers. And I don't know that those workers don't feel like they're part of it. I don't think that you have to be with people. I think it's important. Physical connection is important. I don't disagree with that. But the idea that you can't feel connected or you can't feel a part of an employer unless you're going to literally their downtown headquarters and you're all working in the same space. I don't know about that. I think that misses it. So anyway, that's what Gladwell was saying this weekend, and I'm curious to know what our guests think. And I thought of Marlo Evangelista first because you are literally at Serendipity offering a variety of very new ideas that didn't even exist a decade or two ago. What do you make of this idea that people have to feel connected to something and they have to be in the same building together?
Yeah, I agree, and I disagree in some ways as well. I think that, you know, we provide a space for members to come in and collaborate. We also provide a space. If you're not a member, you can come and use the space, the conference room, to use for the hour, for the day, giving people a sense of it's there and you can take it if you want it. I think that me as a millennial, I've worked from home and I've also worked in person, and a combination of both is what I crave, you know, having the interaction of people, creating, you know, relationships that spark the conversation. You know, being in our lab, you may find your next therapist or your next lawyer, you know, that the serendipitous relationship that we can build.
Yeah, it's not just all people in pajamas or people who feel disconnected from society, right?
Correct.
Yeah. By the way, Marla mentioned being a millennial. Read a piece in The Atlantic recently about how Gen Z folks view millennials as sort of out of touch. And I just about melted. I'm going, wow, that happened fast. Yeah. Ben, what do you make of Gladwell's quotes there about, you know, you got to go to the same office, you got to feel connected to something, and that's, we got to get people back into that mindset of work.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty intense what he said. So this last summer, I hosted 8 interns from RIT, and they were all remote. And it was probably one of the best experiences I've ever had, having these 8 different RIT students of various backgrounds. Some of them were programmers. Several of them were graphic designers, accounting, business development, and social media marketing. And together, they all worked flawlessly over online, just working from home. A couple times, some of them that were still here local to Rochester would come into the lounge, and we'd work out of there together, and it was always great. But it was always meant to be a fully remote co-op, and everyone loved it, allowed for flexibility, and they were able to get a very meaningful internship in addition to their resume.
So you don't agree that it's impossible to feel connected to something if you're not all working in the same space?
Yeah. I've been gaming since I've been 12 years old, and gaming always revolved around the virtual world. And there's been several projects that I've worked on since I was, you know, that young that lasted several years, and I met people from around the world, and I've always felt connected and driven and felt like I belonged to something. And none of that was ever in person. I mean, now I'm doing something that's a physical location, but that's only just a small part of it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, I would say to Gladwell, if you want people to feel like they're part of something important, that is on the company, the employer, et cetera, to provide that meaning, to treat people well, and to make them feel invested.
100%.
Yeah. It's not just on the employees. And lazy employees is sort of the subtext of Gladwell's idea. Lazy employees in their pajamas. I don't know. I mean, Evan Galina, a lot of what Galina has created at Innovation Square is a very different model of, frankly, the world in our downtown space. And I wonder what you think about this idea that people have to feel meaning, they have to do it the old way.
So I've always liked Gladwell.
I did too, by the way. He's like a guilty pleasure. He's like junk food.
His examples can be extreme.
Yeah.
To prove his point, of course, which makes him entertaining to read. I'm going to view this from a little different lens, though, for a second. And not so much as a real estate developer, but if you're a company and your goal is talent attraction, you need to figure out how to attract the best talent. So if you go back 10, 15 years to the Google model, we're going to build the coolest workspace possible. So when people come on our campus, they say, yeah, this is a place I want to be. This is a place I want to work. We went through that with Datto at the Metropolitan. We put a slide into two or three of their floors, like a playground slide and the ball pit and all this crazy stuff. And it was a goal to attract talent. So now if you're an employer and you're looking to attract the highest talent and those folks say, yeah, we want to be remote, well, I think it's hard in a way not to respond to that, which has its challenges, of course. But to say you don't feel a part of something, I don't necessarily agree with that. That's what you make of it. Because you can email and talk on the phone and feel a part and a connection with people. And if you don't do that, then maybe there's a barrier there. But in my personal opinion, I'd love to see people back in the office and in and around our downtown, of course.
Well, let me just squeeze in a little bit of listener feedback. Bob says, as to Kodak Tower in High Falls are walkable. Too bad High Falls is not thriving. I used to love going there, but it's always a pain with parking. There's a lot of parking in this city. There's a lot of parking in this city. I know Innovation Square's got the best parking now, but there's a lot of parking in this city. Bob, I hear you, but working now in High Falls, I'm thrilled to be here, and I would love to see a little bit more energy here too, Bob. It's a special place. It's always amazing when people see the falls for the first time. Another listener is asking, can anyone walk in off the street and experience Innovation Square and its current offerings, or is it more exclusionary/exclusive?
If you walk in our front door, you can certainly go to Marla and see Marla at Serendipity. Once the YMCA is fully functional, you'll be able to go down there and sign up. Obviously, the student housing is a little more exclusive and the traditional office space. But if you just walk on our campus, there's public areas. We have a public lobby. You can sit down in the community commons. We do have a large student lounge that's only accessible to tenants. But you can certainly experience it to some degree.
Okay. And David says, grown-ups need a ball pit as an incentive to work. What infantilized fantasy land is that person living in? Do you want to elaborate a little there, Evan?
That's a company that we have right downtown at the Metropolitan, the former Chase Tower. Datto, they're a large tech company, and that was one of their build-out requirements. We want to have a cool, fun place to be, and they have a full arcade, they have a slide, they have a ball pit, they've got sleeping pods. They've got all the stuff you think about when you think Silicon Valley.
Interesting. And by the way, the great Connections listeners research staff, this comes from Jane, who says, Evan, Gladwell has zero room to talk about this. In 2020, he wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal in which he admitted he's written in coffee shops for a living for much of my adult life. He told The Guardian in 2005 that he started working every day from home, but always from his couch because he hates desks. Come on, man. Don't be beyond parody. I mean, I still like Gladwell. I'm kind of with Evan Galina here. I still like him, but don't be beyond parody here, Malcolm. Very interesting stuff. If you want to learn more about what's happening at Serendipity, Marla, where do people need to go?
Serendipitylabs.com.
Serendipitylabs.com. Their location is in the old Xerox Tower, the Innovation Square building there. Ben Garvey, where do they find you with Great Lakes Gaming?
GLGamingLounges.com.
GLGamingLounges.com. And of course, if you want to check out the old Xerox Tower, people know it on the skyline, but what do you want them to know, Evan?
InnovationSquareRock.com. Stop by, come see us. We have our property manager right in the front lobby. She can answer any questions that anyone might have. And poke your head around. Walk around downtown. I encourage you to go explore if you haven't been downtown in a while.
Mm-hmm. It's been a long time coming for the old Xerox Tower. Kodak Tower is not there yet and perhaps in the offing. But thanks to Evan and the team for coming in. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
At Marla Evangelista, thank you.
Thank you.
Ben Garvey, thank you, Ben.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
More connections coming up.